Hello and welcome to Newsmakers. I'm your host, Lisa Pugh. She's a lifelong Republican with more than 25 years in public office, including more than a decade in the state legislature. But this past year has likely been the most controversial for State Senator Kathy Bernier. As a former county clerk, she has been standing up for the integrity of Wisconsin's election system. She's shepherding a number of bills through her elections committee and has been at the forefront of criticism from some even in her own party. She joins us today to talk about her legacy as she leaves office later this year. Thank you for joining us, Senator Bernier.
Pleasure to be here, Lisa.
So I know you have a variety of interests and concerns, things you've worked on during your time in the legislature, but this past year really has been dominated by elections conversations, election reform requests. How do you feel about that? Is that appropriate that this is how you're spending your last year?
Actually, it probably is. I was pondering retirement a bit ago, and so I thought, there's nothing holding me back from speaking my mind and calling it like I see it. Now, generally, I do that, oftentimes behind closed doors with my colleagues, but now I felt called upon to address the misinformation and disinformation in regard to the election system itself. And I continue that conversation. I will be holding a meeting, hopefully, with Timothy Ramthan to talk to him about the electoral process, which is being arranged by a friend of ours.
So you mentioned Representative Ramthan. He's maybe one of those individuals in the legislature who you perhaps don't see eye to eye with. Do you think there's common ground there?
I'm skeptical, but a friend of mine, Dane Deutsch from Rice Lake, a very intelligent IT professor at Stout, asked me to meet up and have an open mind and discuss things. And if Timothy has the same open mind, I think it'll be a good conversation. But I have not had that experience with the folks that are adamant that there was massive voter fraud. When I've tried to explain how you cannot stuff ballots into a ballot box, it would be noticed. Various other aspects of the election system and process, I meet with, I don't believe you. And so if that is what we end up at, I will be very disappointed that I've spent so much time. The other problem I've seen with the Peter Bornager, Tim Ramthan, Janelle Branchon, up until last week, they haven't gone to the Wisconsin Election Commission and sat down and asked the questions, why does it look like there are people over 100 years old, hundreds and hundreds of people over 100 years old? Why is that? And they could explain that. And if they looked at the Wisconsin Election Commission website, they would also see that those frequently asked questions are constantly updated with the conspiracy theories or the accusations on the election system. Wisconsin Election Commission updates that almost every day with factual information. The other thing I wanted to point out to my colleagues and the citizens of Wisconsin who believe there is massive voter fraud and they have evidence of it, the legislature is a lawmaking body. We do not enforce, we do not carry out, and we do not prosecute. That is the executive branch and the judicial branch. So if you have this information, then you need to go to the Wisconsin Election Commission, verify that it's factual, and then from there, if it is, you need to go see a district attorney who can prosecute the voter fraud. We are not a prosecuting entity in the legislature.
So you said you're sitting down with Representative Ramthan, who's also obviously running for governor. Do you think it is dangerous for people who hold those views around feeling as if the election system is broken and that it's not trustworthy? Is it dangerous to have somebody like that in the governor's office?
Well, I think he needs to really search out the truth. And I have no doubt Tim and I were friends in the legislature, in the assembly. I think he's misguided at this point. Whether it's dangerous or not is up to the electors, I guess. You know, you decide who's you want in the governorship, and that's our democracy. That's the way we carry out our government. So if people believe that they have all the faith in Timothy Ramphin, then fine. But I don't think his depth of knowledge and breadth of knowledge and experience would be conducive to being a governor. I'll leave that up to the voters.
That's your opinion. You mentioned our democracy, and I know that you feel very passionately about that. You've spoken about that during the course of this year, where there's been all of this controversy and conversation around the 2020 presidential election. You spoke about this at an event in December. Let's take a listen to that.
No election is perfect, but there is not evidence of intentional malfeasance, no evidence that the election in 2020 wasn't accurate. When Benjamin Franklin came out of the convention and our Constitution was created, he was asked, "What kind of a government do we have?" And he said, "A republic if we can keep it." We're in jeopardy of losing it.
Got a little emotional there talking about your concerns for our democracy. Do you still feel like that, have those fears?
Absolutely, and not just on the state level, on the federal level as well. So the pin I have is from the first meeting we had in the Assembly of State Legislatures to discuss an Article 5 Amendment Convention. And I looked around the room, and there was an African American there. There were women there talking about our republic and the dysfunction at the federal level, the dysfunction in Congress. And clearly we have some major issues in our country that I think the citizens, the states, need to address one by one. And an amendment convention would be a good place for us to come together and talk about how states can address many of the issues that we have, whether it's the electoral process or whether it is the federal government and the defund the police and all of the things that are going on right now. And I have concerns for our republic.
As we said in the opening, you faced a lot of criticism this year directed from members of your own party. President Trump calling you a Republican in name only, Rhino, because of your position on drop boxes, former State Supreme Court Justice Gableman asking for your resignation. You mentioned Representative Branch, and you just last week talked about downplaying voter fraud. Has that criticism been difficult for you in this last year?
Well, if you're a good leader, you take a lot of slings and arrows. So I consider myself a good leader now, that Donald Trump knows who I am. And so that's all fine. I don't mind the criticism whatsoever because I have the truth on my side. That is what I believe, and I think that's what most Wisconsinites believe. So if, in fact, Donald Trump won the election in the state of Wisconsin, here's a fact that is extraordinarily convincing and should make people stop and think. All of the congressional races were up. Everyone who went in to vote, all of those voting Republican, voted Republican in congressional races. 51,000 people voted Republican and didn't vote for Donald Trump in those congressional races. In 92 of 99 seats in the assembly, over 50,000 voted Republican, but didn't vote for Donald Trump. So that tells us that people had a strong opinion about Donald Trump, and being a Republican didn't convince them to vote for him. And so just that fact is evident that there was not massive voter fraud that just picked out Donald Trump and no other races. So it's clear.
I know you have also been on record saying we do need some reforms of our election system. You have been shepherding some bills through your committee that align with some findings from the Legislative Audit Bureau. Are all of those bills equally important? I know there's indefinitely confined voters, there's some absentee ballot corrections, and then a constitutional amendment around funding that can come in from private entities to support election administration. Are they all equally important, or if you wanted to get one across the finish line, is there something that you think this needs to get done?
Well, I think I can get indefinitely confined done. As you know, I work well with those with disabilities and the organizations that support them. So I've been working with Barbara Beckert and others to come up with a solution on the indefinitely confined. It is inappropriate to claim to be indefinitely confined when you're not. It is not illegal now, but I would like to see that we clarify that if you claim to be indefinitely confined, then you have a physical issue that does not allow you to be mobile or to be able to go and vote as needed. And so that bill I have worked and reworked and reworked in order to be hit the target. So we're going to remove all of the people who claim to be indefinitely confined that really weren't, most of all of them. And then it will be a little bit of a hassle for those who are actually indefinitely confined. But that we need to clean up that list. And so we're going to do that. But we're also going to say we have databases now that if you put your driver's license number, your date of birth, your address, Our system can check all of that information. If you don't have a driver's license or a Wisconsin ID, then you can use your last four digits of your Social Security number, which is the same as what you probably did when you registered to vote. So the misinformation we have is people don't understand that your request for absentee is not the only form on file. Your registration, you have to be a registered voter with all of the exact same information as what your request for absentee is. And so that to me is an important bill to get done. It protects those with disabilities, and yet it also doesn't allow people who are not disabled to utilize that process. It was not intended for that. And I know I've taken criticism for saying this, but I'm going to say it anyway. I don't park in a disabled parking spot because I am not disabled. There are laws against it and that protect the rights of people who are disabled. The indefinitely confined provision in our law was intended for those with disabilities, not just someone who can just fill out. And I was so disappointed in a state representative and a state senator who claimed to be indefinitely confined. But now we find out that I know of two people, one my boyfriend and one Becky Clayfish, accidentally checked that. So this new bill has a completely separate form and you can't accidentally check it. And so,
and like you said, you'll clean up what's there and then move forward with the stronger. Are you confident that the governor is in agreement on some of these changes that you're hoping to move forward? Do you anticipate they'll become law?
Well, I think that Barbara Beckert and Janet Zander and others are touching base with the governor.
That one should become law.
I think it might, but, you know,
The other bills?
We're so polarized in this country and in this state that if it's Democrat, the Republicans don't like it. And if it's Republican, the Democrats don't like it. And so we're You know, I'm not sure, but I know Governor Evers has signed at least 12 of my bills, and so I think he looks at them closely, maybe. I'm hoping.
Okay. One last question about elections, maybe. You know more about Wisconsin's election system probably than most other people in the state, former county clerk and now chairing the Senate Elections Committee. Wisconsin's unique in its kind of decentralized elections process with the focus on those 1,800 municipal clerks and 72 county clerks. Is that a good system? Is that an advantage for Wisconsin? Should that localization be preserved?
You know, I've thought about this often, actually, and I was on the U.S. Election Assistance Commission Board of Advisors, and I was in a room full of secretaries of state and county clerks, and county clerks in most states run the entire electoral process. And I thought, you know, I like Wisconsin's process because municipal clerks have skin in the game. They have an oath of office, they have integrity, they want to make sure that their citizens are served properly. And so I think that's a good thing. And otherwise, the county clerks would have to find people to work the elections that would set up all the polling places separately. They would have to get enough staff to do that, and all of that responsibility would fall on the county clerk. And I think that would, I think that's got to be difficult, to say the least. So the fact that we have municipal clerks who know their citizens, who can get volunteer poll workers, I think it's a good system. I don't think we would want it any other way.
Mm-hmm. As we said in the opening, you're passionate about many things and have worked on many different issues during your time in the legislature. I'm assuming a lot of your legacy when you leave office will be about this last year in election reform. But I know that you've worked on so many other issues during your time. You've been a caregiver for your father. You're one of just a handful of women legislators. You've worked on mental health legislation, reading legislation. What do you want your legacy to be?
Well, you know, I read an article from Dan Jankowski in Stanley, who wrote a complimentary article about my tenure. And he always said, what he said was that I'm a people person, and I am. And so it's about our citizens, it's about our people. And I think I just want them to know that I cared about the citizens of the state of Wisconsin more than I cared about politics. I am a political creature. I run in a party, a Republican Party. I'm proud of that. But the bottom line, it comes down to the citizens of my district and the citizens of the state of Wisconsin. And if my legacy is I cared about my citizens more than my politics, I've accomplished a lot.
Sounds like a good legacy. I just mentioned briefly the reading legislation, and you and I were talking about this before, that you haven't been on the Education Committee previously in your career, but now you are the lead on some reading legislation. You've been pushing for changes in the way that literacy is taught to our kids and citing concerns about lagging test scores in the state. Let's listen to what you said in a recent Education Committee hearing.
64% of Wisconsin fourth grade readers are not proficient readers, while a full 34% struggle to read at even the most basic level. Nationally, Wisconsin is one of the only handful of states where students of each and every demographic group underperform the national average for their peer group. That was never the case in the state of Wisconsin in previous years. If we are not allowed to address the needs of our children now, following a pandemic, then when?
You've said that even if the governor vetoes reading legislation you've proposed, which he has done with one of your prior bills, that you will not give up. What's the governor missing? He's the education governor, former state superintendent. Doesn't he know what needs to happen for reading for students?
I would encourage Governor Evers and those in the Department of Public Instruction to get the course and the book called Who Moved My Cheese. They are accustomed to doing business as usual. They don't seem to want to change how we do things in the state of Wisconsin in regard to our children and their reading. And the science of reading has been around for quite some time. And it was shocking to me after learning about Representative Culp's children who have dyslexia, and that the science of reading methods for teaching children with reading difficulties, whether dyslexia or otherwise, is somewhat ignored. And our children are going beyond fourth grade, many of them with the inability to read, and look at most of the people in prisons cannot read past a fourth grade level. What does that tell us? That tells us that literacy is so extraordinarily important. And so that's what got me interested, was the dyslexia legislation and the dyslexia guidebook, and then meeting all of the people within those organizations that are interested in reading. I met with higher education people in my area from Stout, River Falls, and Eau Claire, saying we need to do science of reading. I talked to the president of the UW system and said our training our teachers is the most important thing we can do for our children, because those teachers need to know how to teach children how to read. And using science-based methods, they're not trained properly in our higher education system, not just UW system, but many others. So we have to start with the teacher and give that teacher the tools they need, because I know they want to go into teaching for important reasons, to be with children and to help children learn. And so they don't know they're going out there ill-equipped for teaching children how to read, all children, not just the ones that learn quickly, but all of them. And so that has been a passion of mine this session. And I know that I have staff that will still be in the Capitol working on the science of reading. We have connections everywhere. So hopefully, I'm confident both Jeremy Thiesfeldt and I are going to hand the ball over to others that will continue carry forward. And I would encourage, you know, I know Governor Evers was the DPI superintendent, and maybe that's his reluctance, and he wants the superintendent of DPI to carry that ball. But we can't wait forever. You know, we already know the facts. So I don't understand the pushback, but we're going to stay at it right through the end of my session.
We did just talk to the DPI superintendent earlier and asked her about Wisconsin's lagging reading scores, and she pointed to the legislature not providing proper funding, that there haven't been the increases to keep up with the fiscal cliff and other sorts of fiscal concerns that school districts have. And that really has contributed to lack of resources and staffing in schools. That then is how you see the reading scores. How would you respond to that?
That is a typical response for somebody who is located in Madison, Wisconsin. I have numerous schools in my district with the same budgets, working on the science of reading, training their teachers. They are doing it now, but they have no leadership at DPI with the excuse that there's not enough funding. The most important thing anyone can do in the world of education, from kindergarten through fourth, fifth, sixth grade, is teach a child how to read. That's the main function. And that is what they're paid to do now. So the excuse there's not enough money, so we're going to let children move on to 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th grade without the ability to read because there's not enough money, is a poor excuse.
One thing that I know you're proud of that you don't get a lot of opportunity to talk about is your advocacy with the Amish community in your district. Could you share a little bit about what you've done and why that's important to you?
Well, I was called by some Amish bishop. You want to talk about humbling? I wasn't sure where to start because they were being evicted from their homes because they weren't following the Uniform Dwelling Code. But since there's no running water in the house or electricity, it is impossible, somewhat, to follow the Uniform Dwelling Code as it was written. And so when I showed up to meet with the elders, the bishop told me that they prayed for a prophet, and I'm it. And if that isn't enough to take the wind out of your lungs, that took me back. And I thought, well, I don't know if God answered with me being a prophet or not, but I know God led me to help them. Just because we don't understand or appreciate their way of life doesn't mean that we have to try to manipulate them or change them, especially in the United States of America. So I wrote the law to exempt them from the Uniform Dwelling Code on plumbing and electrical, and they use a gravity system, which is extraordinarily unique. And even after that, well, I had Department of Safety and Professional Services had determined something other than the intent of the law, so I changed it again, passed it again, and still we were having problems. And then Amish do not like to use lawyers. They don't want to sue. They live a biblical life separate from government, and they don't want to, you know, mess with government at all. But sometimes government wants to mess with them. So there was a frank discussion I had with the Department of Safety and Professional Services on the deliberate misinterpretation of the intent of the law, and that they did hire a lawyer. It was a past Amish person out of Chicago that their backs were against the wall, and they hired a lawyer, and it happened to be somebody who was Amish. And I said, I will have them subpoena me. I will have them ask me the intent of the law. I will explain the intent of the law to the judge, and we'll see where it goes from there. And I haven't heard any more out of that situation with the county zoning and planning people interpreting the law as they wanted to, rather than how it was intended. And I guess that's why we have lawyers, and many, many lawyers.
Right. What so. A great story. That is an important part of your legacy. Thank you for sharing that.
Sure.
One other thing I wanted to ask you about, what's it like being a woman in the legislature? You feel like your experience is different?
Yeah, most of the time we're one of the guys, you know, for the most part. You know, when I've had, you know, when I decided to retire, you know, to be perfectly honest, it was the men who texted me or emailed me or talked with me and said it's been refreshing to have you in our caucus. Now, it might be me, not because I'm a woman, but because I've always shared my thoughts or opinions as thoughtfully as possible, but directly. I do not do political spin. When we have political talking points that come out, I do not memorize them. And it's annoying to me, actually, when I listen to, whether Democrat or Republican, get up there and talk, and it's like they say the same thing over in the news media. it's interesting, you listen to them, and I don't care what news channel you're watching, they're all saying the same talking points over and over again. I think
has that gotten you into trouble sometimes, speaking off the cuff?
Well, not majorly. I guess this session, maybe a little more. But I've had people, matter of fact, when I said I had colleagues that supported my position on elections, I had a public records request asking for the names of the people in my caucus that supported my position. I don't think we had anything in writing. I think it was more conversation or phone calls. And so unless Michael found something, I don't know. But so now, you know, people are afraid to step up and support you because you can't put anything in writing anyway. But there's a lot of people, Republicans, conservatives, that understand and appreciate my knowledge base and have shared those thoughts. So,
I know you've said that you're not leaving. You didn't announce your retirement due to any of the controversy or criticism that you've received around the elections issue. But is there anything about that criticism that makes it easier to leave?
Well, Lisa, how perceptive. Yes. The closer I get to the end of my tenure, and, you know, I don't necessarily like all the attention from news media, actually. I'm not exactly comfortable. Although people tell me I sound comfortable, I'm not. I'm nervous as all get out. But I think that taking the positions I've taken, which has been against the grain, so to speak, has made it easier to make the decision to go. And of course, you know, I don't know when people say, why are you leaving? I said, well, what are you going to be doing when you're almost 67 years old? Starting a new term, a new four-year term. I want to leave when people say, she did a good job and she will be missed, then I thought she would never go. So I would rather be missed than people just being glad I'm gone. So,
one lighter piece of legislation you worked on this year is to make Colby the Wisconsin state cheese. I was looking at your remarks on that, and you said that about Colby's invention, it's a reminder that just one small person from one small place can take an idea and change history. Does that also kind of reflect how you'd like to be remembered?
Absolutely. I know we're going against the grain on that, too. It's kind of my MO. I must not have paid attention with hundreds of bills going through in a session that not too many years ago, Todd Novak passed a bill to make cheese our state dairy product. And had I realized it at the time, I might have pushed then to say, well, it should be Colby cheese because Colby cheese was created in the state of Wisconsin. And as a matter of fact, I remember going to Jim Falls Dairy, and that is, they made nothing but Kraft Colby cheese there. And that really, Colby cheese really put Wisconsin on the map for the massive amount of cheese that we make here in the state. And so it should be noted, and it is. Colby has gotten a lot of attention because of it, and I'm glad they have, because this state, outside of the southern part of the state, and there's a lot of agricultural area in the southern part of the state as well, but our state is ag, and we're very proud of it. It's billions and billions of dollars to our state. I think, in my estimation, with the recessions that we've experienced, Wisconsin has never hit the deep dip that many other states have because we're agriculture. We sell food.
And good food.
And good food. So
the Colby as a state cheese, that'd be like a crown jewel on your career if that became law. Where can we find you in your first weeks and months after you leave office? What will now Kathy Bernier be doing?
Well, I'm done in January of 2023. Hopefully, I'll be at South Padre Island, Texas. However, I do know that as a matter of fact, a county board chairman already talked to me about potentially running for county board. I'm not sure I want to be tied down each and every month for committee meetings and all of that. So we'll see. I probably think that if the Wisconsin Election Commission is still set up with retired county or municipal clerks, that may be down the road. We'll see about that. I'm not sure. And maybe I'll get involved in federal politics as far as working and helping people run for federal office.
So we haven't heard the last of you.
No, I'm done running for office, but I'm guessing that somebody might tap me for my knowledge base or commitment to the conservative principles.
Well, thank you so much for sitting down and talking to us today.
My pleasure.
And thank you to the viewers of Newsmakers. Be sure to tune in again as we highlight the issues and sit down with the decision makers who make a difference for all of us.
This program is a production of Wisconsin Eye, an independent, nonpartisan, nonprofit media network with a mission to inform, educate, and engage the citizens of Wisconsin. Wisconsin Eye is the nation's first and only independently funded state civics broadcast network, providing gavel-to-gavel access to government proceedings and events at the state capitol.